Welcome to the Playlist Podcast, the weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of The Playlist, and this time I have a special edition of the show for you folks. For this episode, myself and one of my co-hosts, Mike D'Angelo, were able to talk with Ramin Bahrani, the director of the new film, The White Tiger. The White Tiger arrives on Netflix on January 22nd and is based on the acclaimed novel of the same name. The story follows the life of Balram, a young servant for a wealthy family that quickly becomes disillusioned with his station in life and begins to figure out how to rise above and become his own master. And in our discussion with Bahrani, we talk about how the film was taken on a new meaning due to the pandemic, showing just how badly some people have it in the world while others gain wealth at unheard of rates. We also talk about a rather famous project that he teased several years back about the Silicon Valley that never got made, as well as why he's had to turn down major studios' offers for potential franchise films that may or may not involve superheroes. So stick around for the full chat as me and Mike talk with Ramin Bahrani about The White Tiger and much, much more. And as always, The Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Discourse, Be Real, The Fourth Wall, and more. If you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find favorite shows. So without further ado, here's our discussion with Ramin Bahrani. Enjoy. How are you doing, Ramin?
Hi, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to start by telling you that we love the movie, first off. And I wanted to kind of ask a general question first. You're used to having your films premiering with big fanfare, whether that's at Cannes or Venice or, you know, whatever film festival. This film obviously is being released a little differently, not just on Netflix, but also in a time where those festivals kind of are not really a thing. So I was curious how you're feeling about releasing this movie now, what's different, kind of your general thoughts about that.
I've made six films, four premiered in Venice and two in Cannes, and then, you know, later in Telluride sometimes, or Toronto, always under Cameron Bailey's leadership. Yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking to not have that opportunity to take the film there. I say that, you know, with the caveat of that's nothing compared to what the whole world is going through. So it's somehow irrelevant in a way compared to people's struggle right now. But of course, you know, you work on a film and more than anything, you like to be there with an audience in a huge cinema and your actors. And in this case, my actors had never been to Venice, which is what we were targeting. My producing partner, McCool, had never been there. So, you know, you were making a film thinking if we're lucky, if the film is good and they like it, maybe we will be there together. And instead, you know, you're sitting at home alone with, you know, your partner or your parents or something like that, experiencing it in a different way without people, which is strange and sad. The flip side is, you know, Netflix is, they have a theatrical release. It is starting, I think, tomorrow maybe. I don't know what it means in the age of COVID, but they're pretty aggressive on it. Normally, without COVID, there would have been a theatrical release for a month or so, which would have been awesome. And then you get this great benefit of 195 countries, subtitled already in 35 languages, all on one day, which is a kind of reach that 99 Homes, Chomp Chomp, Goodbye Solo, Man Push Card never had. You know, so that's kind of awesome and hard to grasp in a way.
Yeah. And you're friends with the author of the White Tiger novel, correct?
Yeah. Arvind Adiga and I have been friends for over 25 years.
Yeah. So was there, you know, did you have a vision of what it might look like? If you were you like able to see early drafts? Were you assumed to be like the person who would maybe take on the filming portion of it? Or was this something you kind of had to pull for or sell him on? Or what was the situation?
You know, Arvind and I went to college together in New York at Columbia. We were part of a gang of Iranians, Indians, Lebanese, Syrians that found one another and became friends. And we've been talking about books and movies and our projects for 25 years on a weekly basis. And I started reading The White Tiger about 4 years before it was published. And
wow,
yeah, I was immediately just riveted by it. It was so brilliantly written, especially the main character, Balram. He was so electric, so funny, so sarcastic and subversive and satirical and so complex. And his journey, his arc was so kind of awesome and complicated that I always wanted to make it into a film. I've been waiting 15 years to make it. It just took some time to get to the right place at the right time to do it.
Sure. And that arc is definitely in place for the film, I can say, as a viewer. It's all of those things in one.
Have you read the novel?
I have not. I have not. So this was brand new to me.
Oh, okay. You could read it. You should. I hope one day read it. You will read it in a day and a half, 2 days. It's such a fast, quick read. It jumps out of your hands when you read it.
My funny aside there, my mother-in-law, actually, I was talking about doing this interview and she's like, oh my God, is that based on the novel? And I was like, yeah, it is. She's like, I can't wait to see that. That novel's great. And I was like, okay, great. Well, you got her seal of approval.
Nice.
So we've seen, you know, many films that serve as kind of commentaries on wealth inequality and, you know, classism before, but, you know, this is arriving at a very opportune time in the world's history where a global pandemic, you know, kills more poor than rich during a time where people are concerned about, you know, just paying the rent. And while rich people grow their wealth by, you know, billion chunks at a time. So yes, this is an Indian story, but you can't help but think of it in current events and when watching. So has this film taken on at all a new meaning for you since you finished the work, you know, in the current state of things as they are?
Yeah, I think so. Those are subjects and themes that have been in all my films, almost all of them, from Man Push Cart until now. And it was maybe in April that I had a first cut screening with Netflix. We had to do it remotely by Zoom, like we're talking now, because the pandemic had started. And I was talking with Scott Stuber, the head of the studio at Netflix, and he really responded, you know, very positively to the first cut of the film, and said, we knew this was a global film when we greenlit it to get made. We felt it had potential to be global. He said, but I remember he said, now with this, I didn't understand actually until he said it, that with this pandemic, my God, the film seems more relevant, sadly, than it had been even before we set out to make it. And that was the first time it hit me what he was saying, what Scott Stuber was saying, that he was right, that the film was now frighteningly more relevant than it had ever been before.
Now, this also shares, The White Tiger shares some thematic DNA with films like Slumdog Millionaire. And in the movie, there's even a kind of an aside by one of the characters mentioning winning ₹1 million wouldn't get you out of this life. Obviously, Slumdog Millionaire has those quote unquote Hollywood-esque moments of fantasy in it. And this is a very much a realism story. Do you think this is a much more honest representation of life in India for the impoverished people? And as much as we love Danny Boyle, do you think it's important that the people who tell these stories are not all white men?
I can't say if it's more honest or not. I'm not in a position to say that. This was just how Arvind saw the novel and how I interpreted the novel and how I saw in a very brief moment my 2 months of research in India, which is nothing. You know, it's such a vast country. So I cannot claim to be an authority on that country. But it seems pretty real to what I saw there. It matched my understandings of life in the films I had made in America. It matched what I had seen living in Iran for 3 years, including in villages like where Balram comes from. My dad comes from a village just like that. I lived there in Iran for many months. I was there for 3 years. So I think there is a lot of authenticity in the film. Danny Boyle is an amazing director. I never forget when I saw, as a film student, Shallow Grave.
Right.
And was just like, holy shit, this guy is incredible. And I think Slumdog Millionaire, the filmmaking is incredible. His connection and his collaboration with Anthony Don Mantle, the cinematographer, was at that time was just kind of revolutionary, what they did with the camera. And the novel it's based on is quite inventive, how it comes and goes from this kind of game show to reveal the path. And yes, it has fantastical elements that don't maybe match my worldview. I don't believe there is a game show that is going to win. You're going to win and you're going to be saved from poverty. I don't think that really happens. That doesn't mean I think it's not a good film. I think it is an excellently made film by a great director who, by the way, you say a white director, yes, but which other white directors put Himesh Patel in Yesterday?
Oh,
I respect him for that. What a great actor and what an awesome move by Danny Boyle. Who else did that? You know, that's cool. And I think it's okay for Danny Boyle to make a movie in India. It's fine. Why not? I like it when Werner Herzog goes to strange places and makes a movie. You know, India is such a thriving film industry. It has so many regional cinemas. Why not let Danny Boyle come and make his own vision of something? I think it was made with an honesty of how he saw things, and all the power to him. He's an awesome director.
Yeah, you touched on a little bit on the themes throughout your movies, throughout your film catalog. They've been kind of, I mean, some people might say that they'd be fairly damning as far as when it comes to capitalism and how those at the top treat those at the, you know, the bottom and consequences of that treatment. Would you say that, you know, the film would be accurately read as an anti-capitalist kind of view, or would you say that humanity's kind of doomed to repeat these actions no matter the, you know, the economic or social structure that's assigned, or are you just kind of interested in that theme of like haves and have nots, that kind of thing?
Well, a big question, you know.
Yeah, sorry. It is a big one.
You know, I don't think it's doesn't take much. Nothing new for me to tell you that globalism didn't really work. Yeah. It made a handful of people very rich at the expense of a lot of other people, and that neoliberal concepts of democracy and liberty that people thought were going to spread around the world and bring humanity to places of joy and lack of conflict, that clearly didn't work out either. So the system, certainly something is not working in it. I'm not an economist or a businessman. I don't know what the answers are, but when I look around, it doesn't seem like things are working out for most people. Jeff Bezos is clearly a genius creator of businesses, you know, with Amazon, but it doesn't seem to take much intelligence to know that the amount of money he makes doesn't seem to be correct. It doesn't seem to make sense that that's not a way for a world to live. So, you know, I think it's a very specific film set in India, but I feel it's universal. I feel we can appreciate and understand it here in America now more than ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we'll switch gears a little bit here and get off of the philosophical questions for a second. I want to go back a few years to a project that was hinted at that never seemed to come to fruition, which was just called the Silicon Valley Project.
You're going to get straight into my torture that I didn't get done the right way. And I get an email from Arvind usually once a month saying, "You fucked that one up."
Well, just to give some background here, this is
a reminder.
Yeah, this is a movie that was talked about, I guess, about 5 years ago now, that you had said that maybe after Ex Machina, oh my gosh, you're dropping your head. I'm so sorry. After Ex Machina was maybe not the right time to go about it. And from all accounts, it seemed like whatever it was a pretty great idea, at least, you know, how you described it. So yes. Can you tell us what happened with that, or is that something you're still looking at, or yeah, did the time come and go?
No, I lost the tail of it. You know, ideas and projects are like a snake that you're trying to hold on to, that it keeps slipping out of your hand. And if you're not careful, it's gone. And I was in Silicon Valley at that time, spending, the thing that I lost track of was I was spending a lot of time in homeless camps in and around the valley. I was in the jungle, which was the largest homeless camp in America, where nomadic people came and went from, living in tents and trailers. This was back in 2014, and a little bit into 15. And this place was 20 minutes drive from the wealthiest zip code in the country, which is Atherton, outside of Palo Alto. And as I started to talk to people in the tech industry, from, let's say, actually the CEO of DoorDash, which was two people in a room when I saw them back then, to even bigger, none of them had ever heard of the jungle or knew it existed or knew there was anything like that going on. And that was astounding to me. And I was trying to figure out a way to connect these things. The people who lived in trailers and tents and were drifting between the valley and San Francisco and LA and moving around without jobs and living like that, with what was going on in terms of the wealth of the valley. And I somehow just lost the snake slipped out of my hand.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, it sounds great. I think you were quoted as saying that it's something that had never been done before. And I mean, when you hear a director say something like that, you got to ask about it. So thanks for humoring us.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll get an email if Arvin listens to this, reminding me I fucked it up.
Well, maybe he'll help you find the snake. So this is the time of the interview as we come to a close here, where we do our due diligence and ask you when Marvel Studios is announcing your next project. So kidding aside, would love to know what's next.
If I did tell you which big studio very, very similar to that offered me something and I said no, you would maybe be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't be.
Well, no. I mean, honestly, it's funny because for the podcast, we interview a lot of auteur type directors and indie directors and, you know, interesting filmmakers. And we've just noticed that so many times Marvel just snatches you guys up. So that's
someone else tried to do that. They're very similar to that. And they were really cool people and the project seemed interesting, but it just didn't match my vision or my mission, I think, you know.
Well, that's awesome that you were able to stay true like that. But yeah, again,
do you like comic book films, Charles?
I mean, I've got a Spider-Man tattoo.
I dabble for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. And yeah, you know, but I obviously love writing for the playlist.
I thought that was Watchmen on you.
Oh yeah. I've got the Watchmen and Spider-Man.
Oh, I didn't see Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's there too. But yeah, so
be interesting.
Yes, it would. Yeah. But what do you got? What do you got going next? Have you decided what's next? Are you working on a few things? I know you also dabble in TV from time to time.
Yeah, there may be something. Someone called me about a TV project, a pilot. I might look into that. But my own work that I'm writing. Yeah, I'm writing something now. I can't say what it is. I'm writing two things. One is a feature that I'm doing with Netflix. We'll announce soon that I'm really excited about. It's an adaptation of something I've been reading for 5 years and have always wanted to do. And I have a TV project I've been working on for 2 years that I'm very excited about. That's kind of a mix between my interests and my work, but with a bit of some genre stuff that is unlike me, that I'm trying to marry them into a project that we're hoping to, if we can get lucky, we'll pull it off maybe later this year. We'll see. Who knows?
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great.
If I can find the snake outside, I live near the Prospect Park, so maybe I need to wander into the trees there and try to see that. Find that. That snake is coming back in a different way. I think I've been noodling on something. Let's see if I can figure it out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Roger Ebert back in 2009 happened to call you the new great American director. And I mean, that's a pretty incredible thing to have written about you after only a few films, the beginning of your career. So I guess my big question for it is, how big is the printout of that column? You know, in your house, do you have a giant canvas? Did you put a billboard outside your house? Is there big things, neon lights pointing at it?
No.
far yeah, from it.
I've gotten some awards here and there, but they're in a box downstairs in the basement. The one thing I'm looking at now on the bookshelf is a letter Raja wrote to me and a puzzle he gave me. I need to give to a new director one day. But I think about Roger a lot. I think about Roger, especially in between films. We would communicate a lot in between movies because of me. I would badger him because I was always wondering what I should do. And I was thinking of ideas. And I typically watch and read a lot in between. I would be watching movies and asking him if he had seen them, or sometimes he would, you know, put on Citizen Kane for the 100th time and he'd be talking on the commentary and then you would ask him questions or he would send me books in the mail sometimes when we were talking. He was like me, I think he was an avid reader, even more than me. He was an avid reader and was sometimes generous and would send me books in the mail, and I miss him a lot. His humor and his insights and his generosity and his ability to talk so deeply about movies and love them so much and to express them in ways that anyone anywhere in the world could understand what he was saying and feel his emotion. And, you know, I miss him a lot.
Well, yeah, as do we all. Yeah, I wanted to thank you, Ramin. This is the end of our interview. And yeah, please, everybody, go watch The White Tiger on Netflix. It comes out January 22nd. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.